We are welcoming some fantastic guests to discuss the Code Crush immersive experience. We're joined by Deepak, Sydney, Lauren, Grace, and Olivia. First off, I just really want to thank you all for joining us here on Tripe Catch. And we'll just go ahead and start with some introductions, a little bit of who you are and how you are or were involved with Code Crush. Deepak, would you like to start us off?
Sure. So my name is Deepak Khazanchi. I'm a faculty in the College of Information Science and Technology at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. And surprisingly, I am the founder of Code Crush. We established it in 2014. As a small project funded by Google. And I can talk more about that afterwards. So let everyone else introduce themselves.
Sydney, would you like to go next?
I am Sydney Kelly, and I am currently the event coordinator. I have been here just over a year, but I have coordinated and planned 3 Code Crushes, and it's something I kind of stumbled into, and I work underneath Deepak. He's got the dreams, and I make it happen.
Lovely. Lauren?
Yeah, I'm a computer science student and IT innovation student at UNO, but I also serve as president of UNO's Association of Computing and Machinery for Women organization. I attended Code Crush as an attendee in 2016, and now I volunteer as one of the chaperones that hangs out with the girls.
Grace?
Hi, I'm Grace Moline. I was in the first generation of Code Crushers back in 2014. So I got like the first taste and the first version of the vision. And I actually ended up majoring in bioinformatics and in undergrad at UNO as a result of Code Crush. Kept volunteering and participating in Code Crush while I was in undergrad at UNO. And now I'm a current second year medical student at NYU.
Yeah. Olivia?
Hi, I'm Olivia. I went to Code Crush this year during the fall. And yeah, I had a really great time there.
Awesome. Well, thank you all. It's so nice to meet you and see some friendly faces. My name is Alyssa Bikes, and I'm a business analyst here at Farm Credit Services of America. I work on the data integration and GIS teams, and I've been here a little over 2 years. Deepak, I would love to hear a little bit more about what Code Crush is.
So Code Crush, you know, was conceived in 2014 to kind of fill a very large gap. I guess I was looking at the data for computer science students in our college first, and we realized that, you know, we have less than 15% female students in undergrad and a little bit more in grad school, but that was a big challenge because when I looked at the data for professionals in the marketplace, you have more than 50% of the population that is educated and works in the workforce were women at that time. And also college-going kids, made up more than half of university populations were women. So that really triggered something in my mind saying, you have to try to change the dynamics. And that's really where I proposed to Google to fund a pilot program to do something like an immersion experience rather than just, offering one-off sessions on why it's so cool to be a computer scientist and so on. I wanted to really reach our rural community especially, and also our folks in the city who have had no chance or exposure to information technology in all its dimensions, right? Including, the technical side and the design side and the innovation side. For many years, we offered the sessions on those. So that's really the idea. And the immersion experience essentially is a 3 to 4 day. It started as a 4 day actually, and it became a little too much to handle 4 days. So I think Grace probably came for 4 days. I don't know if Lauren, you came for 4 days, but so we turned that into a 3-day program We would host the students and their teacher mentors, about 50 or 60 of them at a time on campus, and provide them academic experiences in the daytime, lots of interaction with role models like Alyssa and many others in the community. We would do panel discussions, and I had a lot of support from three women CEOs actually in Omaha, who actually tried to encourage me to make it national, which is not viable. But we tried to just use their help in bringing in a lot of leaders for panel discussions, and also later on for field trips in the afternoon. And then we would also mix in, and we still do all of this. We also used to mix in some college exposure. So we would take a campus walk, go to the health facility, interact with students like Lauren and Grace when they were undergrads. So that's really kind of the vision behind our Code Crush. And ultimately our goal, and I would just stop there, is not necessarily to, keep track of whether they went to college and did IT, but more about inspiring young women to think about different types of role models, different types of roles, and different types of potential academic opportunities and career opportunities. So we really wanted to just build this ecosystem where people could explore.
That's so amazing. I love hearing that story. Was there anything in particular that really inspired you or was like your muse in that of creating this immersive experience?
Well, I mean, I was seeing that, I think my inspiration was really a lot of, frustration with the fact that, we know, some of the original NASA software developers were women. Now that Hidden Figures has made that famous, right? But the fact is that women had been involved in computing when I was a college kid. And I think what happened was that somehow, that through peer pressure, through absence of role models, through just, here's what girls do kind of attitude. And I think in some ways also inadequate counseling at middle and high school level to encourage people. And then I would also admit a failure on the academic side of things in not teaching computing in a much more interesting way, especially to the early age kids. And I think all of those factors really just, motivated and inspired me to kind of find alternative solutions to that. So that's really, we haven't cracked the problem yet. I mean, we still have only 20% of CS majors in the country who are women. But you know what? I know of examples who are right here in this screen who are doing amazing things. So I think that's what matters to me.
That's awesome. I love this. So kicking it back to our past and even somewhat current attendees, what ages were you when you joined Code Crush?
Let's see. So I was a freshman in high school. So I think I would have been like 14, 13 or 14 at the time. And I wanted to chime in and say like a lot of the things that Deepak was saying really resonated with me, especially I came from like a rural background as well. And at the time, like, I think it's a little different now. I think that like, they're building the curriculum in some of these schools, but at the time, there were no computer science classes offered in my high school or middle school. We had like some very basic training in like Microsoft Word and Excel and PowerPoint and things like that, but absolutely like no exposure to programming. So not something that I had like seen for myself up until like being at Code Crush. And I also like really loved like when he was talking about the female role models. I think that was like a really big deal for me as well. Like being at Code Crush, seeing other women in these roles, it's like, you don't imagine these things for yourself until you see people like you, like doing these really impressive things. And like, then you start to like think about those possibilities for yourself as well. And yeah, even if like not all of the Code Crushers go on to go into IT, they were exposed. They could see themselves in those careers. They went home and they talked about it with their classmates and with their teachers. I know my teacher in particular was really inspired by Code Crush to start the conversation about computer science in our high school. And I think things have improved, and I would like that Code Crush had some role in that as well. So
that's wonderful.
Lauren?
Yeah, I think I would have been 14 at the time, so 8th grade, 9th grade. I want to speak to it being an immersive experience. I know Deepak was saying it's not necessarily the goal of the program to just get people to go to UNO or go to the College of IS&T. I think it being an immersive experience is really important. If you can imagine 8th grade me, I was absolutely terrified to go live in a hotel with a bunch of people I had never seen before, never met before. So I think there's a lot of social learning that happens that isn't necessarily related to computer science at all.
The social aspect is definitely huge. Thinking back to when I, eons ago, was in that age range and how difficult it can be to go into those situations and really get out of your comfort zone. Thank you for explaining that. Olivia, do you have anything you'd like to say?
This year was my first year attending, and I'm in 8th grade, so I'm 13. And I met a lot of great girls there, and I made a lot of new friends there.
That's awesome. So, you know, obviously that 8th and 9th grade age range, 13 to 14, what is the main age for our attendees. Is there a reasoning behind that age, or is it, you know, just that was kind of the pilot that happened?
No, there's a rationale for it. I read some studies, I'm an academic, so first thing I do is I go and look for some stuff. So actually I read a study that also added to my, frustration, I guess, of the fact that you don't do enough. And that was that, by 8th or 9th grade, the study showed that female students tend to identify role models who are influential in their lives in making decisions about what they don't want to do and want to do, right? And I mean, there are some very interesting examples. Like I think Indiana University did a study where they asked people to draw what they would want to be when they grow up. And a lot of the girls would probably never imagine being an IT or a computer scientist, maybe an astronaut, but not a scientist. So I think that those two things, I mean, the fact that people, Grace was saying, it's difficult when you're in a 50 people school in, Western Nebraska, and you don't have many women role models who are actually doing these kind of interesting things, right? And then the second thing was just this, this disparity in the way female students tend to make decisions versus guys, I think. And plus, I felt personally that when I tried to convince high school students to come to our college, and I did that for many, many years, it was very hard to convince, people who have already made up their mind, right? So I think it is too late to try to convince people to explore other areas if you're going to only focus in high school. And so I thought of it more as pipeline building for the long run.
Pipeline building. That's such a great little comment. I go back to when I was in high school and think about, I was coding in, 9th grade. I got an A in those classes, but most of my classes I got A's. I didn't realize that was something that I was proficient in. And if I would have known that prior to continuing, I might have gotten into my career path a lot sooner. And so having an experience like this, I think, could be so beneficial to girls in that age range. And it's just such an inspiring story. I love it so much. Okay, let's switch over to Sydney. I know that you're kind of work behind the scenes and you're talking to teachers and trying to get recruitment for these young ladies to be able to come to this experience. What are some emotional appeals to the program? Like, what really draws the teachers to want to promote this experience?
I think one of the greatest draws to our sort of little camp that we've got going compared to maybe a lot of other events that girls can participate in is that all girls and teachers both need to do is figure out a way to get there.
And then after that, their hotel is paid for, their food is paid for, they get free t-shirts, they get free goodies from companies, you know, they get all these fun things. And it creates this amazing opportunity that others might not be able to participate in, even if we had an entry fee of like $25. Some girls just simply can't spend that sort of money. And so to be able to sit here and be like, we will pay for you to not only have fun, you'll meet some fantastic new people, but you'll learn something super, super cool. And additionally to that, we ask teachers to come and we say, you know, we'll show you all these new technology, this new information, and all of those things and how to implement it into your classroom. And we'll actually pay you to do it. We will pay you to spend your time. I mean, they do take part of their weekend, a good chunk of it. And as a full-time working person, that's a pretty big deal. And so I think that's a fantastic way to get people to participate in things, is just letting the opportunity be there.
Absolutely. You know, we kind of talked about the costs that go into this, that is not in the hands of the students, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing, you know, just getting there and being a part of it. How is this funded mainly?
It's funded. We get tons of different sources. It's mostly private and private grants and funding and that sort of thing. So we ask for sponsors, just like FCSA did this year. We get grant funding from different foundations and things like that. And so we've almost been like just piecing these things together to put together just this wonderful large program and get help from tons of wonderful companies and businesses and groups like you guys.
Are there ways that other people, like that aren't big businesses, to be able to support this experience?
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, we have to apply for grants. So we apply for CSR funding. We submitted as a CSR proposal to some companies. There is also support from NASA in the Omaha area to give us the hotel costs. So we write different grants the private foundations have been very generous in Omaha. So, you know, yeah, a few of the foundations have always supported us since the 2015-14 event, which was supported by Google. Because I think part of the reason was that when we first announced the event in 2014, and this is, you know, Grace may not even remember this, but we had more than 150 applications, so before 30 spots. So we kind of, you know, realize that there is a huge pent-up demand and so that was easy to convince foundations to at least support it for a few years. After COVID, I think it's been a little struggle because we have had to piecemeal donations and grants together.
That makes complete sense. I think it was kind of mentioned a little bit ago about sponsoring or mentorship and being able to help out with chaperoning. Are there ways, you know, if it's not financial, that we can get involved?
I think one of the most fantastic ways people can assist us in creating and keeping this event on is finding new people to participate. We are always looking for more and more numbers, and those numbers in applications and people talking about it and that sort of thing is what keeps us going. So as long as we can demonstrate that we still have this demand for it, we will still find those, you know, kind of like major funding sources and that sort of thing. And so really talking about it, you know, asking whether it's like your child's teacher or your friend who's a teacher, you know, seeing if they're interested, telling, you know, your mom group friends, like that sort of thing, I think is totally the best way for kind of the average person. We're lucky enough that we get a lot of like employment and chaperoning help from the students within, like especially the undergrads within UNO. And so on that front, I think they get valuable experience helping the girls, and the girls can also see, like the students can see what their kind of future can look like and hang out with these cool chaperones and that sort of thing. So.
Well, great. So going back to Olivia, Lauren, and Grace, how did you find that mentorship when you were an attendee at Code Crush? How valuable was that to you?
It was, honestly, the reason why I studied what I studied in undergrad. Like, I had not heard of the field, but I met a student. I think her name was, Deepak, correct me if I'm wrong, Emily Pachunki. Do you remember her?
Emily Pachunka, correct. Yeah.
Pachunka. She was a bioinformatics major at the time, and she helped with one of the sessions where they taught us all about the field. And I just remember thinking wow, she's so cool. And she's into these things that I'm also into. And she's found this unique field to study those things. I used to be very interested in biology and DNA. I still am. But at the time, DNA genetics was the coolest thing in the world to me. And I had no idea that computer science was the absolute end all be all tool to study those things. And so bioinformatics, that door just opened up as a result of that. And also Dr. Cooper, one of the professors at UNO, absolutely fantastic. I learned so much from her and got mentorship from her there and throughout my undergrad career. So.
Yeah, I have a very similar story. I met Sandy Vlasnik when I attended Code Crush, and she's been an absolutely fantastic resource and supporter for me throughout my education. And that's a big part of the reason why I chose UNO as well. Just having those connections, knowing those people, and seeing that it really is a supportive field, a supportive environment.
How I found Code Crush was one of my teachers who I'm very good friends with. And I was telling her one day that I liked doing some computer stuff. And she has taken students to Code Crush before in the past. And she thought this would be a really good idea for me. And so I went with her this fall. So
what kind of teacher is she viewed? Where do you go to school at?
I go to Parkview Christian, and she's a math teacher.
Hi. I love, computers and math. They kind of go hand in hand. So love seeing the math love out there. Oh, great. Can you give a couple examples of some things that you may have learned about while you were at Code Crush that really just kind of piqued your interest and tipped it into the IT world?
I really enjoyed doing block coding. And that's probably one of my favorite things there. And one of the things I did really like that we did there was the race that we did with these little robots. We had to program the robots to go through these little maze. And the quickest time, t-shirt and these cups and stuff. And that I really enjoyed that. And me and my teacher were really having a lot of fun with that.
Was that the robot that was on the sweatshirt? I have to ask.
No, it wasn't.
Darn. I loved that little robot. He was so cute.
Robbie is our supporting mascot. We will never forget Robbie. But they were Ozobots, is what we used during that competition.
That's awesome.
And the cool thing was it was a teacher and student teams that competed against each other. So I was kind of fun.
Get a little competition. I know there's nothing wrong with some friendly competition. Lauren or Grace, do you have anything to add?
I really distinctly remember extracting DNA from a strawberry. I think it's really important that there's a lot of exposure to different fields that you might not necessarily know are computer science, like Grace was talking about. When you think about computer science and you don't really know anything about computer science, you really just think about someone sitting in their basement coding away all day and all night.
Yeah, so night 7-Up.
Yeah, and the Doritos, yeah. So I think it's really important to be able to see that really any of your interests can be combined with computer science.
Did you both have an innovation session too? No. I mean, I'm just curious because Lauren is now doing innovation, so I would just... Did you have that when you were a Code Crusher? No.
I don't remember. I know we had a session, we were talking about how technology was being combined with fashion to make really interesting dresses. I think that might have been the innovation session.
That's right. That was, yeah. One of our, we had a, actually we still have it in the storage, but it's a frame of a fashion model, but it was decorated with lights and you had to code the lights.
That would have been like so pretty. I could only imagine like how cool that would be.
Absolutely. Only problem was we had to do it in C. So the kids had to quickly learn C programming.
Gotta be quick.
You had code crashers coding in C?
That's right. I mean, we did a very small exercise.
That's amazing. For me, I would, like, obviously I got very excited when Lauren mentioned the strawberry DNA activity. I loved that. That, like, very much picked my biology brain. I also wanted to comment on, like, the block coding. I thought that was, like, really important because I think that as a first step into computer science, like, that really demystifies, like, coding. It makes it this, like, thing that, like, makes sense and isn't scary. And, like, you have all of the tools you need to, like, build things without as much like starting from ground zero, knowing nothing. It's a lot less scary.
Coding can be kind of terrifying, especially when you see, you know, some of those SQL queries or different HTML even sometimes being so long and, you know, extensive. It can be scary. So getting to see it at a different aspect, absolutely, I would agree.
Yeah, and I think that was like a really important thing, like a really important takeaway from Code Crush is that like until you have an experience like this where you lean into it and you like actually like start to piece some of these things together, you realize like, oh, this isn't that intimidating. This isn't that scary. But like from the other side of it where you're just looking at like all of these words not having the context, it feels intimidating, but it really isn't, which is like really great because Code Crush like breaks that glass.
I can absolutely vouch for that too, because especially the last two events I've been involved in, I've been really like sitting in on the sessions, like seeing how they work and how making sure they're fun and hands-on and taking all the pictures for media and things like that. And even I'm sitting there for 15 minutes and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I think I might be able to do this now too. Like that's actually not as super complicated as I thought. So the lessons definitely do wonders for people who majority of the girls walk in with absolutely no knowledge or previous experience, like myself, who isn't even technically there to learn. And I'm sitting there like, okay, feel like I could build my own app now. Let's go.
I love that. It's just, yeah, it can be very scary and being able to break down those walls and present information in a way that many different kinds of learning styles could understand and pick up quickly, and then also like have that application of those skills, like that's just, you know, top of the trees for me. I love that. So I know that we do have some of our previous attendees that are in college and, you know, finding their career paths. Can you kind of go into a little bit of how you have chosen the direction that you want to go? And then Olivia, I'll ask you a little bit of a question of maybe where you want to go.
My path has like kind of like morphed a lot along the way. I ended up studying bioinformatics as a result of that experience. Got to do a lot of like computer science as well as like all of the pre-med curriculum. And I think it made my undergrad experience like a lot more fun for me, a lot more interesting. And I like came out with some skills, like some very hard skills that were really beneficial to me in like terms of research experiences that I had in undergrad and after and potentially throughout my like career in medical school. But yeah, I'm on the 4-year path of medical school now, and then we'll do residency, and then eventually we'll be a doctor, but that's a long time from now.
Do you have like a special area that you think that you might want to go into, you know, during residency or where you want to find your home?
That's such a good question. I'm still pretty early. We just started year two, so I have like a couple years to kind of nail that down. So I would call myself pretty undifferentiated at this point.
Understandable. I've changed my career path, I don't even know how many times. So I know it's kind of a loaded question. Lauren, do you want to talk about your experience or your trajectory?
Yeah, so right now I'm a computer science student. I chose that initially because it seemed like the most vanilla option that could be applied to the most different career paths, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do at the time. As I progressed through my education, I actually got a job doing robotics research in one of the labs at UNO, which was not something I had an interest in beforehand. But it's really turned into something that I think is going to be a really prevalent part of my future. Now I'll be going for IT Innovation Masters. So right now I'm in the Fast Track program. So one of the classes I'm taking for my undergrad will count for both my undergrad and my master's.
Thank you. Olivia, I know that, you know, you're young. You've got a lot of years ahead of you. But is there anything in IT or computer science that you might be interested in going through to the future?
I would probably like to be interested in doing further research on the block coding, because I feel like I really enjoy doing that, just like putting in all the directions to lead to something and to more. And I feel like I would enjoy that to keep researching and stuff like that.
I also have to ask Olivia, I know that we kind of took you around when you were here at Farm Credit and little different aspects. Was there a session that really stood out to you the most this year here at Farm Credit?
I feel like one of the sessions I did do was the one that we got to build our own website. I feel like that one really stuck out to me because I never thought, I thought it would be like really hard to do, but I found out it was actually pretty easy to do. And it was fun to start making and stuff like that.
CSS, you'll find out it's a love and hate relationship, I promise you. If the color's just off ever so slightly.
Let me see what I have here.
I know, Olivia, you had mentioned that your teacher had brought up Code Crush to you and thinking that was a good opportunity for you. Grace and Lauren, was there anyone else that may have inspired you to join this?
Yeah, my dad was a science teacher ever since I was a little kid. And then he started getting into computer science. So I had a really great role model. And then it was the high ability learners teacher at my middle school who encouraged me to apply. My story is pretty similar to Olivia's. I had a math teacher who found out about the program, was super excited about it, wanted to get as many students from our school in there as possible. He actually pulled off getting three of us in that first round of Code Crush. He was a great person for that kind of thing. He's the kind of teacher that sees the potential in you before it's there. Because at the time I was like, coding? I was like, I don't know. Certainly, he was right.
I just want to make a comment here because I'm hearing the word coding a lot and it bothers me too. So I think we need to keep reminding our audience and our supporters that technology is not just coding, right? I mean, I'm okay with people not doing coding either, and the future is actually with ChatGPT and AI. Supporting coding, I think the future is not for coders. The future is for designers, thinkers, people who can think about complex issues and, apply them in multiple disciplines, as Grace is doing and Lauren is thinking of doing in innovation. I mean, I think in my mind, the future is really about this kind of very transdisciplinary view of technology, not just a uniquely disciplinary view of technology. So I think if even a young girl like Olivia is thinking about coding as fabulous, but I think also thinking about, technology as just a part of who you are. I mean, it's like reading, writing, critical thinking, and technology. I mean, today in our environment and society, we need critical thinking, but also technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I was going to say, and the field of bioinformatics actually is such a good example of that too, because like a majority of what you're doing in bioinformatics, and depending on what routes you take, it's like you're actually using like applications, or you're like using structures that already exist, and you're creatively solving problems or like interpreting data and stuff. So there, you're right, there's like absolutely so much more that goes into all of these fields beyond like coding, programming.
I think that's a really good point too. I mean, even just looking in our business technology area at FCNSA, there are so many other roles besides a developer and engineer. I mean, being a business analyst, I maybe I'd run some SQL and do a little bit here and there, but it's, I'm not doing the coding. I'm doing more of the facilitation, or, you know, connecting the dots as needed and gathering requirements. Whereas that may not be seen as a traditional technology role, but it is an important role to have functioning teams between business and technology. So great point. There are so many other roles too, you know, data stewards and all these different kinds. And I love being able to shed light on those roles that aren't seen as typical IT jobs, if you will.
And, you know, and I just heard not recently that now we need prompt engineers, you know, people who write prompts for ChatGPT. So, you know, I mean, and, you know, this is a lot of new jobs are going to be created, which we don't even know about.
That's very true. I actually went to a conference this past summer, and they were saying that, you know, AI and ChatGPT and all of that, it's actually getting dumber. And so because of all of the information that has been fed to them, it's you know, it's learning off of us. So I think a prompt writer would probably be a good idea. You have to be very specific, and, you know, you want an answer, this is how you have to write it. So I don't know that I would be the best at that. But I think that brings in a good segue to talk about AI and how it can affect, you know, these different roles. What are your thoughts on AI as past attendees and students right now?
Yeah, and I think Olivia had a lesson. Yeah, right? Yes? Yeah. Well, not this time. But, you know, I'd say, you know, I mean, and I'm sure Lauren and Grace, I mean, even Sydney and Olivia have an opinion about this, because, you know, it's all around us. But, I mean, I think that, you know, the only thing I would argue is that all that is important, but I think literacy of AI, understanding how AI actually supports human beings is even more important in my mind, because ultimately it's a human creation and it has our biases built into it. And if we learn to be critical and objective in our thinking, that will make us better as a society and as human beings. So I think if we are going to just be dependent on artificial automation without critically evaluating it, then I think we are in trouble. So I guess my prospective view of AI is that, you know, my hope is that we continue to build it and make it better, but also, you know, always trust and verify, as someone famous said many, many years ago. I think the human being is going to be even more important.
I think that's very interesting. And I will admit, like, my AI literacy is probably not to par for like a very in-depth conversation. But I think it is really interesting to see like how AI is going to evolve in the next few years. I think like I've overheard a few conversations, even just like in the field of healthcare, which I'm like very involved in, like what the future looks like in terms of like AI being used for medicine and like how it could make medicine more efficient, but also like all of the ethical like balance that needs to take place. And I don't have a lot to say on it, but I think it's going to be like a very interesting conversation.
I think I also have a somewhat unique perspective on this. Some of my research revolves around design automation with AI. So feeding some design methodologies to different types of AIs that take different types of input. And seeing how we might be able to use that to come up with new and more creative designs. Like Deepak was saying, it's going to be incredibly important to have somebody to verify those designs and make sure they're actually
usable and safe for people. And I think it'll be important for some laws and restrictions to be placed around the usage of these AIs. But yeah, it's a very powerful tool in the making.
Olivia, do you use AI at all in any aspect?
Not really. Like sometimes at school we'll just use it for like fun or something, but we don't really use it that much.
Yeah. Olivia, I don't know if you remember working with the Interpublic group. They came one of the mornings and you guys built commercials.
I don't know
how clear they were on that, but that was AI. If you wanted to talk about that experience, if you remember, I know it was a long weekend full of a lot of information, but
yeah,
if you remember that at all.
I kind of forgot about that class, but I do remember that we did get to look up like AI pictures. Like we had to type in something and like very specifically, we had to type in like a setting and what they're doing and stuff like that. And then it'll give us like these AI pictures that we can use for our commercial, basically.
That's really creative and cool. I guess that kind of segues into another question. Where do you get your inspiration for the sessions that are being drawn?
So I let Sydney add to this, but you know, generally we brainstorm every time Sydney and I what worked in the past Word Crush. And what didn't. Sometimes some sessions are just, you know, bad. Because the kids, I mean, our goal is that both the teachers, because we do a separate parallel session for teachers, we want both the teachers and the students to take away something.
Right.
And, you know, and also be engaged. So sometimes, you know, we have a flop. But generally, what we have done is, and I'm kind of the one who likes to push it. So, I mean, I think we did AI and we did data science this time. So we did that because I said, hey, I know some people who are going to do this for us. So that's kind of how it works. I mean, Grace and Lauren have also been, sometimes they have bent their arms to help me out. So, I mean, this is part of the cost of being involved in my life. So,
yeah, it definitely kind of works around who we have available to us. We have some wonderful, wonderful people that have helped us for many years. There's a reason that people keep bringing up the strawberry extraction. We do it almost every single event. And almost every single event, people are like, that was so much fun. That was so cool. So like people like Dr. Cooper are a fan favorite. And so we will keep including, you know, things like bioinformatics that continue to be interesting, that continue to make an impact while simultaneously getting those teachers to update on new information and new technology. And so most of the ideas do come from Deepak, but I'm kind of like the ground person that talks to everyone to make sure, you know, was this fun? Was this hands-on? What would you like to know? We do lots of surveys, and I ask a bajillion questions to people on what they loved and what they hated. So it's definitely a lot of people communication between participants and whatever wonderful people are available to us for teaching.
Do you, when you're having these conversations, do you give like kind of a topic or something that you're hoping to cover, and then the whoever is hosting that session is able to kind of take it into their own hands? Or do you have like a structure that you like to follow?
We like to do a little bit of both. So, you know, between Sydney and I, we agree that, you know, no talking. I mean, you can't spend 30 minutes giving a lecture. So that's the rule. So you got to do 10 minutes max. If you want to explain something, you got to do hands-on stuff. You got to make people do stuff. And so that's really, you know, that's why, the bioinformatics one is very popular because obviously it's, you know, improved it every year and it's made it better and better. And this time we introduced, you know, AI, computer vision, and also data science. Now, both the, you know, the computer vision person is actually my PhD student, so he knows exactly what to expect. But we work, and then, you know, Sydney follows up with everyone on, you know, we need a one-page lesson plan. We want to help you structure it. And we also provide everyone an assistant. So they have to have a student like Lauren or Grace or other students we have who would actually work with the faculty member, because sometimes the faculty member just, you know, doesn't get the age at which they should target something. So having an undergrad is so important. So, you know, we need to target it to the right age and all that. So that is part of that kind of facilitation process, which requires a lot of effort on Sydney's part because I make her go and meet everyone and talk to them and so on. But essentially, that's the idea. I mean, I tell everyone in advance that, you know, we don't want just traditional outcome things. So.
Yeah, it's definitely fun seeing the difference. We probably split the sessions are about half top between faculty members of UNO and undergrads. And so kind of going to both and being like, okay, we got to do this hands-on. You got to assume that there's, you know, 15 minutes of attention span. This is a workshop. This is an activity. We got to make sure it's not a lecture. And we kind of provide them with the challenge and the freedom to make these lesson plans, assuming that they are going to have absolutely multiple levels of learning and understanding, especially when it comes to our teacher sessions. Some of those teachers have been to Code Crush 8 to 10 to 14 times. And then every year we still have teachers that are coming for the first time. And so we give all of our instructors kind of that freedom to use their comfortability in knowing their topic on how to build it and how to create a good environment for that very, very complex situation. And they do a fantastic job.
That's awesome. I know that, you know, age appropriateness is really difficult to kind of nail down. You don't want to dumb things down to the point that, you know, it's not in the correct age range, but you also don't want it to be too high. And also, yeah, keeping that hands-on kind of mentality. From a perspective of an attendee, how did you feel like that you liked the sessions that were, you know, kind of, this is what we're going to do, and then go right into the hands-on portion?
Yeah, I think like as an attendee, especially like when you're an eighth or a ninth grader, you're going to get the most out of the things that you like are physically doing yourself. And I think it also plays into like that idea of like being able to picture yourself as someone who can do these things as opposed to being like someone who is seeing other people do these things. So I think that's also like very important in terms of like getting the students to actually like try out some of these things and realize that they have like the potential to have these skills.
Yeah, I think having the activities that maybe have a little less direction is really important, given that problem solving and critical thinking are so important in computer science. So you don't necessarily want to be holding their hand. And sometimes just saying, go run wild and figure out what you can and do what you can is sometimes the best method.
There's no wrong way to get it done as long as it gets done, right? Olivia, do you have any input on how you liked the hands-on sessions?
I kind of like, just me personally, I do like doing like figuring things out on my own and stuff like that. And so when we were allowed to do that, it was like kind of more fun for me to just try to test out things and figure out things on my own.
Also, sure. I don't know if he said that, but, you know, a lot of the teachers are undergrads too, so I mean, are in our code. So that also makes a big difference.
Love having them involved as well. Absolutely. I do have maybe one more question for you in a sentence or two. Can you tell me what you love about Code Crush? Just very high level. The things that you love the most just about Code Crush in two sentences or less.
I love that Code Crush is run by such wonderful, passionate people who care so much about making computer science like exciting and accessible to young women who are being influenced by them every time they come through the doors. Thank you guys so much for what you do.
Yeah, I love that Code Crush is really focused on building skills and not necessarily building careers. I think it makes it a lot more widely applicable and a lot more usable for students. And again, thank you guys. This is a really wonderful program.
I think I love Code Crush is because they'll be able to know all about computer or none about computer stuff, and you'll just be able to learn a lot in that short week of the short 3 days.
I love Code Crush too, because I think, you know, Sydney was confirmed this, but we have had more than 400 young women go through Code Crush in 9 years. And, you know, I always just think about the young ladies who are here. I mean, like Grace and Lauren, of course, they've heard from me many, many times over their career, even now, after meeting you. But there are lots of others in Omaha who went through Code Crush. I mean, like, who I keep in touch with, at least, you know. So I think it's just amazing to see that, you know. So I think, you know, whether we make a short-term difference or a long-term difference, it doesn't matter, because I think what matters is that for that moment in time, you know, we have had an interesting experience. So I think that will ultimately help everyone.
Sydney, do you happen to have a reason of why you love Code Crush?
I personally love Code Crush because I get to see the girls from start to finish. And so I love seeing them barely able to say two words to their neighbor at their table who's a stranger and to me. And then by closing ceremonies times, they are sharing, you know, see this super cool app that I made. I've been working on this webpage all week because I was so excited about it. And hey, we shared a Snapchat. We've got our phone number. We're going to meet up and do this. And so not only are they learning and taking away these super cool projects, but they're finding people that they belong with and people that they can socialize and make friends with who love the same things they do.
All of that was so beautifully put. I think as a woman in technology, it took me a little bit longer to find my home. I appreciate this experience, even though I really wasn't an attendee, being an outsider. And seeing what it did for young women. I mean, obviously, Lauren and Grace, you are a testament to this awesome experience. And Olivia, you will be one day too. I just absolutely know it. And just getting that out there and showing young women that you can do this too. This isn't just for men. This isn't for any specific demographic. It's for everyone. And so I just want to say thank you for starting this beautiful, beautiful experience. I know I keep using the word experience, but I think that's what it is. I think it's such a cool opportunity for young women. And so thank you for that. So I'm actually going to end this. I would like to say thank you so much for spending your time here today with me and with EI2 on TriCatch. It was so wonderful to meet you all, to hear your stories and why Code Crush is as great as it is today. So thank you. And I really hope I can hear from you all again in a couple of years and see where you all are at. So thank you.